Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
Far away, long ago, glowing dim as an ember, things my heart used to know, things it yearns to remember.
That, of course, the beautiful opening number early on in the show from Anastasia, which is playing at the Nederlander Theater through April 7th. Such a gorgeous show to look at, with the Russian ancestry to it, life in Paris, and just adults and kids alike will just love watching this show unfold on stage. And joining me now to talk about it is, playing the role of the Dowager Empress, Joy Franz. You've seen her on Broadway in Les Liaisons Dangereuses, Into the Wood, Woods, A Little Night Music. I can go on and on, Pippin. And I'm going to mention one national tour, Joy, and that is Damn Yankees, which you did with Jerry Lewis. Correct.
Yes, my favorite, Jerry Lewis.
And
it was glorious.
And I have, totally off point, I have Jerry's cane that he used. He signed it, and he used it in Damn Yankees on stage, and I own that cane. I just thought I'd let you know.
Well, I had one, too.
Oh.
But we were supposed to go back to London, and I left some things over there in London, and then we never went back. We didn't go back to London, so I don't have my cane.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you can come look at mine anytime you like.
Okay.
All right. Well, welcome to Chicago. And talk for folks
Thank you.
I mean, I think everybody's heard of Anastasia. Not everybody knows sort of what it's about. I've just talked about its beauty and pageantry. So fill the listeners in about what they experience when they see the story of Anastasia.
Well, it's a glorious story. Well, how can I start? It's about finding yourself. A young woman who thinks that she is or might be looking for someone, and she discovers through the story that she possibly could be Anastasia.
Right.
Because when they were, the whole family was killed back in 1902, I believe.
Somewhere around there, 05,
correct?
Yeah.
And the Romanovs held, the czars of the Romanovs for over 300 years. They ruled Russia, but they never really helped the people. So anyway, it's a long story. But this is a gorgeous story. Terrence McNally wrote the book.
Yes.
And wonderful composer and lyricist, as you well know, Lynn Ahrens and
Stephen Flaherty, who are known
for Ragtime,
and it's just such wonderful, wonderful work in their past, and it does come together here. And as I said, I already talked about the sets and the staging. I was chatting with a couple of people here at WGN who have seen the show, and just, you know, it really is striking as you watch how the show is presented. And talk a little bit about your character, because we see you all the way through, and you're very important to Anastasia.
Well, as being her grandmother,
right?
I never gave up hope that I would find her, and I've put out rewards, a huge amount of money to find her all these years, and lots of, you know, got letters from all these young women that are saying they are Anastasia, and of course none of them are, and she's just never gave up hope. And this show is about hope and courage and love of family. And it's, I think the message in the show is absolutely beautiful. I mean, we have wonderful humor in the show, but it's really a message of love and hope and courage and never giving up on your dreams.
Do you find when you perform, it's a long show, and so adults certainly go through, but you get kids. Who tends to be waiting for you at the stage door? Is it young girls? Is it families, parents? Who tends
all
to be really
ages? Oh my gosh, it's for the whole family, that's for sure. I mean, we've had young little girls dressed up as Anastasia. It's like we have young men, we have old men, we have, you know, it's really from childhood to into the 90s, and everyone loves this show. They treat us like rock stars. I mean, they scream for us. It's just a thrill, and with standing ovation every night, screaming for us, and the audiences just really appreciate this show because it is a hopeful show. It gives great messages, and it's so entertaining. It's just for everyone.
You know, I know that the critics, the show opened in March 2017. I've seen it on Broadway as well. And the critics really raved about the fact that, you have to give some credit here to Flaherty and Ahrens, but it's the moments that they choose to put to musicalize, if you will. It becomes such a full score. I mean, it's just a gorgeous show to listen to. And it really does, when you're watching it, you feel the Russian influence. You feel the French influence. It's just sort of all there, and I imagine you see it as you sing it and play it.
Yes, I mean, you get transported. You just become part of that story. When I watched a rehearsal for understudies, and it's like you get swept away in it. The colors, the technology, I mean, it's just a beautiful show. The costumes, oh my gosh, are glorious to see. No one, I don't think, will ever be disappointed to come to see this show. They're going to be inspired, I think. There's one of the most important lines I feel in the show that I get to say is when Anastasia asked me, do you remember the last time you saw Anastasia? And I say, I never knew it was the last time. We never do. We never know which goodbye is the last. And that just resonates in my soul and a lot of people. That touches a lot of people's hearts.
It is beautiful.
Because it's also, we don't.
Go ahead.
It is so true.
Very
we
much
don't
so.
Know.
It's also, it's intriguing.
That's
to
why
me.
It's important to be present with people that you love and like.
I guess that's what I really find striking about the show. It's a moment in history. I mean, you're reading about something that took place back in the 1920, something like that, I think, in the certain portion in Paris. And yet you watch the story, and I have a feeling young people and older people alike probably look, and it makes you wonder your own past, your own ties, the reality of it all.
Right.
It just raises so many of those questions in the mind. But it's about family. It's about love. That's the message of the show.
It is, totally. And we are due for that in this time and age. We need it.
A lot of actors say that. Just such a beautiful show. Folks can enjoy it through April 7th over at the Niederlander Theater. It used to be called the Oriental, but it's now named for James Niederlander, a name you know well, I'm sure.
And yes, I do.
Yes, and you can get tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com. So coming into it, we played your character singing Once Upon a December. It's sort of intriguing, Joy, that the show goes out with that same number, but I did want to share with my listeners the beautiful full sound of what that of what the ensemble of Anastasia looks like. So with my thanks to you, Joy Franz, for joining me, I hope you break legs every night on the stage here in Chicago through April 7th as you travel on the national tour. And we're going to go out with a little bit of the beautiful song Once Upon a December, but from the finale and the entire cast. Thank you.
To go to Italy. The men are so gorgeous. and you get off the plane, and they hand you a guidebook, and it says, do not stare back at the Italian men, or they'll consider it a sign of encouragement. I know, I'm like, really? Is it going to be that easy?
Oh, she doesn't need any encouragement. That is the comedy, and I'm sure you know it once you heard that the voice start off. Vicky Barbalak, who is on her trailer nasty tour, a phrase she has made so very famous on America's Got Talent. She didn't quite win it, but you know, my experience with people who don't win America's Got Talent, they have bigger careers than those who do. And she is no exception. Joining us prior to her visit here on Sunday, April 7th in Chicago is Vicky Barbalak. Vicky, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Paul. I'm so happy you had me here. I just cannot wait to get to the Windy City.
Oh, and we need you here. There's probably trailer parks here as well that you'll want to visit. I don't know, maybe while you're here.
How do the trailers hold the snow? That is like, it's like, how do planes fly and how do trailers live in Chicago? I want to know.
Maybe because we get the ice first and the ice holds onto the wheels and then the snow just piles on top of it and you never leave anyway, so it doesn't matter.
It could be. You shovel your roof and your sidewalk. I'm pretty sure that's what you'd have to do.
Exactly. Well, you live in California. You don't worry about any of that.
No, we just worry about earthquakes and the occasional brush fire.
Yeah, we all have our crosses to bear.
Here.
You know, as I've just studied your career and all of that, I mean, it's like everybody else. You appear on America's Got Talent, and it's as though you're the overnight success. But you were an overnight success, but you've been many years in the making for that moment, right? Tell my listeners about that.
Yeah, I didn't start stand-up till I was about 40, mm-hmm. which was, a really bad idea. Nobody likes 40-year-olds in Los Angeles. They hate them. So, I didn't know. I didn't know that was a bad thing. But Mitzi Shore at the Comedy Store,
yes, yeah.
She saw me a few years in and she took me under her wing. But other than that, they would just look at you right to your face. They don't even hide it. They go, no, you're too old. You're too fat. You're too ugly. We can't help you. They don't even like say anything. They don't even hide it.
But were you doing before it, by the way? What was the previous career?
I worked for my parents at their carpet store for 20 years in Oceanside.
You were selling
and,
carpet?
My dad... Yeah, I sold carpet with my parents. We sold seconds and irregulars only. It was a real high-end shop.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine why you'd want
to
leave. Why would you leave that career?
Yeah. Well, I know. It was so fulfilling. people always say, oh, comedy's such a struggle. Oh, how do you do it? And I hear other comics going, this sucks. And I'm like, you want to sell carpet for 20 years with your crazy family? That's a struggle. This is fun.
Well, and now I try not to ask questions that like everybody asks, but I just have to ask this one. I mean, the phrase trailer nasty, which I'm sort of curious, was it something that preceded AGT or was it something that kind of visited there and you just realized how great, because I had the sense it was new to AGT.
It was not new to AGT. I've done it about 5 years. I just got tired of people saying trailer trash to me. And I'm like, I got to elevate that a little. So
and that you did.
That's it.
And you of course had as part of the series, we would have moments of you, back in the trailer park and visiting with neighbors. And my guess is that's all real. Those people are real. Those were your neighbors. Those are your friends.
Absolutely. Yeah, Carol in the curlers. She's making the trailer nasty wine cork earrings now for me. Clark, the old dude, he's 97 now. He came over yesterday and visited, and my little grandsons came out and he told them war stories. He's 7 and a 14-year-old, and he's literally saying, yeah, they were burned to a crisp as they stood. Like, oh my God!
You are still there, right? I mean, I can't, with the success you're experiencing, I can't imagine there isn't maybe a step away in the planning, or you can't do that because this is part of who you are.
Well, there's no, you can't dynamite me out of this trailer. I did buy the second best trailer in my park when the show started.
Okay.
It was just coincidental that it all worked out, and the trailer park realtor loaned me $60,000 and then until I sold my other one. And so just in the very beginning of when everything was going on in the show, my dream trailer came available. It's on the tippity top of the hill. I look down on all the other trailers, like a Kardashian. So it's a beautiful, beautiful view. And I know it sounds crazy, but I'm just so proud of this trailer.
I've actually never heard of the phrase dream trailer either, but I suppose it's... Now, my experience was the long trailer with Lucy and Desi. Did that trigger all of this for you?
Oh, I love that movie. Actually, when I was a little kid, I was like 16, I got my driver's license. My grandma moved from her farm in Iowa to California, to Huntington Beach. And she bought a trailer. And then as soon as I got my driver's license, when I was 16, about one weekend a month, we'd drive to San Bernardino, where most trailers are made. And we'd go trailer, like dream trailer shopping. And look at the sunken tubs and the avocado and gold, you know, which I live right now. I have avocado. 1974 avocado tubs, just like we used to look at.
Oh, my God,
so
I'd love to see it.
I am living the dream that I always had. I'm a weirdo for trailers.
No, it sounds like a Vegas hotel room put on wheels.
I did actually do my big bathroom at the new trailer in orange and gold and avocado. It is Vegas. And then I had somebody do a custom painting for me of a lion drinking a cocktail. And it's very, people come in and they love it.
I can't imagine you get everybody in there now. You probably have people from all over the park and everywhere else wanting to visit with you. How can you even fit in there? But you have a nice outside area too.
I just keep a box of wine on the porch, Paul, and they don't even have to come in.
I love it. Straws, or we get paper cup. Don't use paper straws. Yeah. Though. We can't do that anymore.
No, we can't do straws.
I love it.
No.
You know, there is, and again, such a treat for me to talk to you, because there is somebody, a comedian, she's gone now, but who you remind me of. And for me, it's fantastic, because I was such a huge fan of hers. And I almost want to, before I tell you who it is, see whether or not somebody has ever told you whether there's kind of a famous comedian, a similar build to yours, who you remind them of. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Is it Tody Fields?
Exactly. That's it. Tody Fields.
When I was 5 years old, I didn't know this till I started stand-up, but I remember being 5 and 6 years old and sitting on the floor in front of the television watching her on Ed Sullivan and thinking to myself, gosh, she's fat like me. She's short. She's wearing a fancy dress. No one's calling her fatty. No one's saying bad things about her. And I remember just being mesmerized. Then I forgot all about her. So I started stand-up, and I went to Beverly Hills to the Museum of Television Radio History. Just when I hang out in L.A., I just go there and hang out during the day.
Sure.
And I started, I looked up, you know, old women comedians a long time ago. And when I saw Tody Fields, it just brought that all back to me. And we're very similar. Like, even our jokes, and like, I don't remember stealing from her. But when she had Ed Sullivan say, Ed, lift me onto the bar stool, lift me, Ed. And he goes, I can't. And then he goes, boys, come here. And the whole band comes up and lifts her onto the bar stool. I mean, that's just the kind of joke I would do. And I loved her. Yes.
Well, so it sounds like you take that as a compliment, which is exactly the way it's meant.
Oh, because, huge. Yes.
Because I think she was amazing. And I think the thing is, for me growing up, and again, you and I are about the same age. So as a kid watching her, I always felt like she could have been in my family. She would have just been sitting around the dinner table. She would have been the funniest one at the table. But that's the feeling I get about you and your comedy. You're not somebody who's unapproachable or whatever. You're somebody who everybody just wants to have at their table.
Oh, thanks. Unless they don't want to share their food because I eat so much.
Well,
I think.
You and I would fight over it.
I feel like, you know, when Mitzi first saw me, she goes, are you from the Midwest? And I'm like, no, but my family is from the Midwest. And she goes, I know it. And I think that I do have that Midwest humor that, you know, my uncles were the funniest men in the world. And if I could make them laugh, and if I heard that one of them called the other and told them one of the things I said, I was just high for months. So I think that my humor is that Midwestern sort of humor.
It absolutely is, and it's one everybody relates to, and that's what I love. And I think all the judges on AGT, they saw that. Certainly Howie did, Simon. There was something about you when you took that stage that just came across into the – and I'm not in – you know, I wasn't there in the space, but just watching it on my television, there's something about you that reaches across to, I think, just the average person, and we connected and related, which is why I got so excited when I saw you were on your way to Chicago.
That makes me happy, I love people so much that I feel like that everybody knows that I'm just giving them a hug, you know? And I think that's a good time to give people a hug.
You know, it's funny. I just had another celebrity on here who said the same kind of a thing. Something going on in this country, I imagine. You're playing a venue, which, by the way, is not a typical comedy venue in Chicago. You're going to be, and I should get the information out, it's Sunday, April 7th at 7 p.m. It's on the Heath main stage, but it's in the Den Theater. You're in Chicago's sort of Wicker Park area. You're kind of, and don't think Wicker Park is trailer park. They're not doing that to you. It's a very gentrified, yuppie. Do people say yuppie anymore? But it's that sort of area there. You're in a very cool place to be.
Cool.
is this going to be a first performance for you in Chicago since all this started, or is there places you played here before?
I've never played in Chicago. I only was on the Jenny Jones show so long ago.
Oh, God, I remember, sure.
Like a breakout. I did stand up 4 months, but the guy that was picking the comics was a super cool gay guy who loved my purple sequin long gown. Because I was so not ready for that then. Yeah, it was terrible. But I got to go to Chicago for that. And other than that, that was probably 17 or 18 years ago. And I've been dying to get back. So my father grew up in Chicago. My mother and father met at the FBI in Chicago, and they worked there. So I love Chicago, so I'm so excited.
I'm glad you said they worked at the FBI. I thought maybe something else brought them together. I wasn't sure whether I should ask.
Well, later on, that would have been the case.
Well, I can't wait to see you here. I appreciate you so much.
Vicki
Barbalak
is... Thank you so much.
Oh, you're coming to the... And people can get tickets at thedentheater.com. And theater is spelled T-R-E, which is the proper English way, and I think you should thank them for that.
Oh, wow.
And people could check you out at your website. And I'll put that on the website for the podcast, which is VickiBarbalakComedy.com, where we can keep up with everything that you're doing. You just have this amazing career. You know, a few seasons ago, there was a guy named Brandon James on America's Got Talent. He finished around with you. Well, Brandon has become a good friend of mine over time, whatever. Oh. And the point is now his career has taken off. I've got Taylor Williamson joining me next week on the podcast. To see the folks.
Taylor's
and I mean
a
this,
great guy.
And I mean this with love. To see the folks who didn't necessarily become number one on the stage, it just doesn't matter. I think the judge has told you that. It doesn't matter.
Oh, no, it doesn't matter. And Simon's been really helping me out lately, so I'm praising everybody. AGT is a marvelous thing. I mean, it's a mirror. It's like insane. It's like Cinderella time.
Well, I know we all want to thank Simon for getting you this big. So why don't you give us Simon's cell phone number, if you would, say that.
The phone number is 310-269-LUVV.
Exactly. He would be mad at you. Do not miss Vicki Barbalak. I hope, you know, this may be your first time, but it's not going to be your last. I hope you will come back and back.
Yeah, and we're staying an extra day just to hang out.
Oh, cool.
I'm really busy on this tour, and I don't get to stay an extra day anywhere, but I just had to. So excited.
Well, maybe I'll get to come say hi to you at some point during that. It would be wonderful.
That'd be great.
TheDenTheater.com is where to get tickets. Vicki Barbalak's Trailer Nasty Tour on the Heath main stage. I look forward to talking to you again. You are going to love this city, I promise you. And I'll give you a series of all the places you should get pizza and other things you want to eat.
Wicked cool, Paul. I'm going to pop my seatbelt. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicki. Best wishes.
See you, bye.
Bye-bye.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that dog is for sale.
Well, that may not be the theme song for this location, but it really should be, because joining me now is Tracy Elliott. He is the new president of the Anti-Cruelty Society. That is certainly where I adopted my soulmate dog, and have done a lot of work with them over the years. So important to the city of Chicago is the Anti-Cruelty Society, and I wanted to do this interview because, Tracy Elliott, you are new to Chicago, new to the job, and let me say welcome.
Thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
So the rest of us already know how fantastic Chicago is and why it is you needed to be here. And you didn't live too far away from here. But talk to me a little bit about what intrigued you about joining the role at the top of the Anti-Cruelty Society.
Well, Chicago certainly has been a city that I've wanted to live in my whole life. I grew up over near South Bend, Chicago was the big city. So Chicago is a huge bonus. But the real great thing about this move for me is being able to work with this remarkable 120-year-old organization that has done so much and that has such an amazing future ahead of it. And I'm just glad to be part of that future.
And when people think of any animal shelter, but think of anti-cruelty, I think their mind goes into the, oh, yeah, that's where I go and I adopt a dog or I adopt a cat or maybe sometimes something else. But there is so much more that goes on. I mean, the clinic. So take a moment and fill people in on exactly all the things or many of the things that anti-cruelty is doing.
To be honest with you, Paul, I think that's the thing I'm most amazed about is the comprehensiveness of the services we provide. So anyone can come here and get their animal spay-neutered. It's a high-volume, low-cost spay-neuter clinic that the prices depend upon the species
and
the
let me just ask,
gender.
Is it need-based? So do I have to be a person in, you know, a financial need to do that, or can I be
not,
anybody?
Not at all. For spay-neuter, it is open to the entire public. However, we do have a vet clinic that does provide veterinary services for people who have financial limitations. And that's really important because veterinary care has become so sophisticated and so able to cure so many diseases of our companion animals, but it's also become very expensive. And so we do not want that to be a barrier to keeping animals healthy and to keep them in your family, in your homes, where they belong. So there's also the low-cost vet clinic, which you can get more information about at our website. But the other thing that's really happening in this field, Paul, that I think you particularly will be intrigued about, is that it is the movement of the animal welfare field in this country to get out of our walls and to get into the community and save animals where they belong, which is in the homes of families. But again, animal care has become expensive and in some cases prohibitive. So like so many other organizations, Anti-Cruelty Society is actually in the neighborhoods of Chicago providing wellness clinics and other kinds of services to help people who love their pets keep their pets safe and healthy in their homes. And that's really where our field is moving. Thankfully, because of spay-neuter efforts and because of better education and because of better enforcement of laws, there are fewer and fewer adoptable animals coming into our shelter, which is great. But that doesn't mean there is not a significant amount of need that is unmet in the community. So we're getting into the neighborhoods. It's something that we were doing in a huge way in the organization that I came from in Asheville, North Carolina. I'm delighted to find how innovative our program is here. And I, for instance, was incredibly inspired to go out to East Garfield Park on Saturday and witness one of our wellness fairs. We served over 150 animals. People brought their entire families, both human and other species families, cats and dogs, and came out and got vaccinations, got a vet wellness exam, and also could make appointments for absolutely free spay-neuter services here on site. So this is something we're going to be doing a lot more of. And the great thing about it is that we are beginning to discover the power of the human-animal bond to change lives. And so for folks who are, you know, having difficulties in their lives of all kinds and face challenges, and children who are facing maybe family instability and trauma, having an animal in the family, which gives you that unconditional love that dogs and cats do, is more critically important, frankly, Paul, than it probably is for you and I, even though I know you and I both passionately love our dogs. But my mind was changed about this when I was talking to a principal in Asheville a few years ago who 100% of his students are on free federally funded lunch. And the entire neighborhood that he serves is at about the average, at about 150% of poverty. He said that probably the best moment in his students' days, if they have a family pet at home, is when they go home and that animal comes up and loves them unconditionally when they arrive in their home. Well, you and I both know how that feels,
oh,
right?
Absolutely.
And that really began to change my thinking about the role of animal sheltering in our world today.
I'm so glad you said that, Tracy, because, I mean, for me, and again, I think I'm an idiot anyway when it comes to animals and pets. And I'm one of those people, when somebody posts a story on Facebook of somebody who's abused an animal, you know,
right,
I'm the one that said, now please put them in the oven. Now please put them, you know, so that's
right,
that's me. But when you talk about the bond, it is so critical because I just don't think, we see laws toughening. You and I, both friends with Steve Dale from WGN Radio, who works passionately at getting laws changed.
He does.
It is a different world today in terms of people realizing, and hopefully the laws will better reflect it, that when something does happen to an animal or you know, that it's just not, you don't take a dog and keep it outside in the winter because you think a dog belongs in the house. It's a different world today, or at least it is in the civilized world.
Well, it is. And of course, the Anti-Cruelty Society was a pioneer in that field, you know, having field investigators and what they call ambulance runs almost from the very beginning of the organization's founding 120 years ago. And we still have a very robust field investigation team. So we have folks who are certified by the state of Illinois to go out and investigate cases of cruelty and take the appropriate action, potentially working with law enforcement. But the truth is that the vast majority of what we see where help is needed, it's not that the human being does not have the desire to treat the animal humanely. Mm-hmm. Not that they don't love the animal. It's that they either don't have the education and know exactly how to proceed in terms of taking care of an animal, or they don't have the resources. And so we have to deal with both ends of that spectrum. Obviously, both people who abuse animals on purpose and neglect them on purpose, they need to be dealt with. They need to be dealt with swiftly.
Harshly.
And we're there. Yeah, we're there to do that.
Do you, you know, there's also, you know, certain dogs like pit bulls and whatever, which get bad reputations. And one of the things that Steve Dale has taught me, it's never the dog, it's an owner.
Yeah.
How do you, so when people come into the Anti-Cruelty Society and they go into, say, the dog adoption room, I want to mention that because my picture's on the wall.
Yes,
mention any room, I got a picture up. And So when they come in and they're looking for something, what do you tell them in terms of trying to help somebody figure out what the right connection is, what the right match is for somebody?
That's a really good question, and we work really hard at that, and I think we're changing our approaches all the time as we're learning more about this. But the key thing is to find out what their living circumstances are, so that they have the right home environment for a particular kind of animal, and it's usually the energy level of the animal, not necessarily the size. You can have a huge dog that is very low energy and is going to do fine in an apartment. On the other hand, you can have a very small dog that needs to run, and they're not going to be doing really well stuck in an apartment all the time. So it's not necessarily size. So we're looking at lifestyle matches. Is the person an outdoors person? Do they like to run and walk? Do they like to be out in the woods or out in the, you know, in the arboretum or whatever, and they like to take their animals, or are they looking for someone to sit and watch a movie with them?
And how do you know? So when a dog comes in, listen, some, especially if they're puppies, they're in and out so fast, you probably didn't know they were there. So, so how do you get to learn for certain dogs what the dog wants if you have one that's not there for very long?
That's a very good question. And of course, it's an imperfect science. So if a dog is an owner surrender, of course, we get the information that we can from the surrendering person. But if they're a stray or if they're a puppy, we don't know. And so we have trained behaviorists who observe and also do rehabilitation with dogs and do enrichment. So, and also our adoption counselors, one of their jobs is to get to know the animal to the extent that is possible in the shelter. Now, the caveat is their behavior in the shelter may not be how they behave in the home. And we make no claims that we understand that. But, for instance, my very first shelter dog, I picked her out of the shelter as a public shelter in Indianapolis because she was the quietest. And I thought, oh, nice, this is going to be a dog that, you know, doesn't bark and has low energy. Well, that lasted about 10 minutes at home. And she became an extremely high-energy vocal dog, although I loved her to death. But so it's an imperfect science, but we do our best to try to figure out what the person is looking for, what their lifestyle is like, what their home circumstances are, and match them up appropriately.
And I have a theory, Tracy, and this is because my first dog, Mertz, who is my soulmate dog, who I name everything after, is from Anti-Cruelty, a couple of other shelter dogs. But I find, and other people say this, that dogs who are adopted from shelters, on some level, they get it, they know it, they are different.
Yeah, I agree. Having had both non-shelter and shelter dogs in my life, I agree with that. I think there is a certain bond that occurs. Yeah, it's hard to know what that is. Is that some sort of, you know, mystical feature of dog sensory abilities that we don't understand, possibly? Or it's maybe just that because you've chosen among such a huge variety that there's a special bond that has driven you to that dog. I know all three of my shelter dogs, I mean, I knew immediately when I looked at them they were going to be mine. So
yeah, me too. Well, yeah.
I can't explain that.
Yes. Well, and Mertz was 10 months old when I found him. That's a story I'll tell you some other time because it's not as simple as it sounds. But in fact, when I wasn't even looking for a dog, I was getting gas across the street of Anti-Cruelty at the gas station over there, and the station was shut down. I'm like, what are you doing? Well, we're closed for about a half an hour while we changed shifts, which was incredible. So I went to kill time by walking over to Anti-Cruelty, and there was little Mertz. He was a 10-month-old puppy, and somebody else was about to adopt him.
Oh, yeah.
And the story some other time, but he ended up with me as it should have been. And he was stray.
Absolutely.
He was found at a corner of Crystal and Hoyne in the city.
Yeah.
Turned out to be the most perfect dog ever on the planet.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons I will forever be thankful to Anti-Cruelty because I wouldn't have found him otherwise.
Well,
and you have that all the time. I also want to give kudos to the staff you have, Kevin Fitzpatrick in development.
Oh my
gosh. The people who work for you guys, you found the right people, or some preceded you, but you found the right people who understand the mindset of people who love animals.
That's right. Well, I tell you, what I can tell you is I've been here a month yesterday, and the most significant amount of my time in this month has been spent getting to know my colleagues and meeting with them in groups and one-on-one and walking around and talking to them. And the thing I'm most delighted about, out of many things that I'm delighted about being here, is the incredible dedication and passion of the staff. And it doesn't matter what they do. Every job here is equally important, and everybody is equally committed. And I think that's how we can get so much done with the resources that we have, is because we have people who are so completely committed to this cause, and they love these animals. Some people have a global sort of passion for the cause. Others have, you know, just a simple love for four-legged creatures. But either way, it all works together to have an incredibly passionate group of people.
And you do need, if you ever come to work in the morning and you happen to look over by near the cat room and you see all these big garbage bags that are filled with newspapers, that's me who comes and drops them off.
That's your Sunday reading.
That is it's all week. I get the newspaper every day, but I save those papers and from time to time bring them all down there. Because that's the point. Listen, some people, they can donate and they should donate and that's great. Other people, they adopt. But the truth is you need help from the community. I mentioned the newspaper thing because that's one of other things people can do. People can volunteer. There's ways to help Anti-Cruelty Society.
That's right. And no matter what you have to invest, how much, whether it be time, money, whatever, a lot or a little, we need it. And that's the only way this all gets done. So, yes, we have a huge volunteer program, very flexible volunteer program that allows you to put in a lot of time or a very little time, depending on what you have. But I have met volunteers here, Paul, and this is the only place I have worked in my entire career where I can say this, that have been here for 25 years.
Yeah.
They've been volunteering for 25. In fact, one gentleman I met was 26 years. I have met probably a dozen others that are more than 10 or 15 years. That says something very, very significant about the organization.
Something right is going on there. I do want to mention an upcoming event. May 18th is Bark in the Park. It's world famous. This will be your first Bark in the Park event, I guess.
Yes, that's right. I'm looking forward to it. May 18th, it's at the green at Soldier Field. And it sounds to me, and I've actually got the website up right now, and it's going through pictures from last year, like it's just an incredibly fun day. You bring your dog, you walk, you drink beer, you eat food, you hang out with other dog lovers. You can bring your cat too, but you know, make sure it's a cat that's going to stick with you.
Right.
But it just sounds like a great day, and it raises a lot of money for the animals, and it raises a lot of awareness, and I think most importantly, it gets animal lovers all together in one place in Chicago to do good work.
And one of the things that you do, that these money goes, of course, for operational and all sorts of other things. But you know, we talked about ways to use the Anti-Cruelty Society. People who have dogs but need training, need lessons, they can come to you for that too.
They can. We are currently retooling our training program, so stay tuned for that.
Oh, okay.
Looking at different ways of delivering that training. People's needs about that have changed, and so we are trying to stay really current with both the offerings that we have for training and the approaches that we're taking. So give us a month or so to come up with some announcements about our new training program. But, yes, you can definitely use the organization for training, particularly even if you're not an adopted, or even if you haven't adopted a dog here.
Yeah. Well, and something else coming up soon. There's a wonderful patio, outdoor patio, where you can take dogs and spend some time with them and all that to learn. And fairly soon, although maybe it started, but it will be a tribute wall so people can for those of us who have had dogs we've loved and want to remember them. That's another way to help the facility and by putting a plaque up on the wall to remember the dogs that they loved. And of course, I mentioned that because I'm helping name that wall back there.
You are helping name that wall
because I can't do enough for you guys.
Well, we appreciate it very much. Yeah, that's a great way to remember, you know, and do something really good if you've lost a loved one. And so we appreciate the fact, Paul, that you've helped us put that together. And come and look at it. It looks great.
Yeah, even if you're not looking for a dog, well, the problem is if you come to Anti-Cruelty Society and you're not looking for a dog, be prepared to go home with one.
You might find one, right.
Or cat, exactly. I should say, or cat, always cat.
Or cat, and, or guinea pig.
Yeah,
or
that's right, or rabbit. I've been there. I've seen birds. I've seen all sorts of things there over time.
That's right. Well, you know, we're an open-door shelter, so someone brings it to us, we take it. And we find a positive disposition, if that's at all possible, if they're healthy and rehabilitatable. So we work with rescue groups for, there was a bearded dragon here when I first got here.
And, really?
He found a home. However, he needed medical rehabilitation first. And did we say no? We did not.
Wow.
He had an infected foot. We treated the foot and found this charming bearded dragon a home. So you were here for every animal and every person in Chicago who needs our help.
And of course, with vets like Dr. Shelley Rubin and others who give up their time, you just can't say enough about the folks. But again, it's their passion.
It is their passion. Yes, Dr. Rubin, in fact, was a volunteer at our wellness fair in East Garfield Park last week, and I watched him working with patients, and it was just a wonderful sight to see. He's a remarkable person.
The website is anticruelty.org. If you are looking for an animal, you can go on that website. There's kind of a current list of who's there and pictures,
right.
And you can check them out, but you got to move fast. You can't look and see a dog and say, I think I'll go next month and check that one out.
That's for sure.
They're not going to be there. And Tracy Elliott, the new president of Anti-Cruelty Society, I've enjoyed getting to meet you thus far. I look forward to working more with you in time, and congratulations. You've come to the best city and the best facility, of the one that really gets it right in treating our beloved animals the way they should be treated. Thank you.
Paul, I appreciate that so much, and thank you for your support and friendship.
My pleasure. We're going to talk again. I encourage people to check out anticruelty.org. Bark in the Park is May 18th, one of many events that goes on through the year, and I love attending those as well, and I look forward to it. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you, Paul.
Take care. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.